And guess who we got on the phone? It's Blake Stubbs, Blockbuster Blake. How you doing, bud?
Good morning, you guys. How are you? Are you ready for this?
I think I am.
Sunday?
I think I am. Blake, are you eating anything? Are you in bed right now? Admit it, or if you're laying down.
I am not in bed.
Okay.
And I ate earlier.
Will you watch the Oscars in bed and eat?
I will not, because I actually go to an Oscar party every year.
You could get into their bed.
Maybe. I mean, if they'll allow it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, sometimes I get a little too antsy on Oscar Sunday, so maybe they have to go put me in timeout.
Yes, exactly.
We'll see what happens.
Now, Blake, I don't mean to, and we're going to talk about movies in a second. Sorry, Esmeralda. I just have one question for Blake. So I know Blake very well. Blockbuster Blake, a big movie critic, and he's great. He's on Dane Neal. He's awesome, all that stuff. But I've known Blake for a long time, and I've seen him at his sloppiest moments. And Blake, you would be someone I believe would eat a full course meal in bed. Am I correct or no?
I mean, why not?
Team Esmeralda.
I mean, if it's like fried chicken, of course I will.
Oh my god!
What fried chicken? That's so greasy.
Yes. High five.
Are you wiping your hands on the sheets?
No, you have napkins or a paper toweling or something. I mean,
what kind of monsters do you think we are?
Why? If you are at the level that you're bringing napkins and cutlery into the bedroom, just eat it at a table.
Napkins, right, Blake?
Yes. And they do make like TV trays or lap trays that you can use. And
you're sick or bedridden.
I didn't know that there was rules to these trays.
That's the only way I could rationalize being okay with it. I mean, I don't want to make a huge mess I'm not one who would eat chips in bed or popcorn or any of that stuff. But, I mean, I'm not saying I'm above it. I'm just saying I haven't done it.
So you only do fine dining in bed. See, I'll do the popcorn and the chips. That doesn't bother me. But
he does seven-course meals.
He does the whole thing.
He gets a Linnea to come to his house.
All right, Blake.
But I'm allergic to cats, so it would have to be a dog butler. I'm just throwing that out.
Still
there.
Same. It's good. Otter butler, yeah. Any animal.
Who would be better at a butler? I feel like dogs are more trainable.
No, dogs.
Yeah, okay.
No, a cat would not.
Yeah. No.
He'd be in the corner smoking, like, I'm not going to help you.
Or it would knock off whatever you're eating, like onto the floor or onto the sheets.
Right, yep. Just to spite you.
Oh, my gosh. Where have we gone? It's 2:42 on this Sunday morning. So
Oscars, Blake.
So, Blake, are you, this is like your big night. This is like your Super Bowl.
This is. I mean, for many years, I've always found some place to talk about the Oscars in terms of, broadcast. And this year in particular, like, I make sure, since 2009, they started doing more than five nominees for Best Picture. So I always make sure I see them all. And I have. I've seen every Best Picture nominee since 2009. And I always want to make sure I give, a fair either review, because, sometimes these films can be reviewed, like, immediately because they have a big, presence, such as like when Lady Bird was, 100% on Rotten Tomatoes for the longest time, or something like Dunkirk, which was this big, World War II epic, or The Shape of Water, which everybody was talking about, but it had this slow sort of release, and, it garnered a whole lot of buzz for the Oscars, even like before it was widely released across the country.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to make sure I see all of these, within a fair amount of time, and I've had a couple of years where, like, because of the films themselves, when they were released and what access I have to them, I've actually been watching them the night before the Oscars.
Okay.
Me too.
That's what Esmeralda does, but with a giant steak in her bed. That's how she watches it.
So, Blake, do you do predictions?
I try to predict, there's a few categories that I always definitely weigh in on or have a pretty solid prediction.
And how have you done?
With cinematography, I'm very accurate. In fact, a few years back, I thought it was going to be one, but I figured the Oscars would go with the other. You know what I mean? Like, I try
so you play
sure
the game. It's not only, you're predicting what the results will be, not necessarily what you think they should be.
Correct.
Hey, when you look at the whole,
if I picked the Oscars, it'd be something different sometimes.
Right.
So yeah,
Blake's Oscars.
When I the blocks, the blocks, the blocksers.
I was gonna go Boskers.
Yeah. That's way better. Thank you. That's also what the Cat Butler would be named. Boskers. Oh! Boskers the Cat Butler. Oh. Blake, I got to ask you, when you've seen all the nominees, when you kind of, and we do this in sports too, where we analyze a draft class, how good is the overall class top to bottom? When you put up these movies this year versus the last 7 or 8 years when we've had a big number of nominees, what do you think about this year's class of movies overall?
I think that it offers a very diverse, sort of palette in terms of, different types of taste of what types of films people might enjoy, for one.
In bed, sorry.
In bed. And two, I also think that, you have a wealth of different types of directors. Some of these directors are first-time directors. Some of these directors are veterans that have, helmed these films. And at the same time, there's two films that take place during World War II, but they're both vastly different approaches to different sort of, incidents that occurred or time periods that occurred during the war.
Mm-hmm.
There's very intimate stories here. There's also comedy in this category. There's also, historical, depictions. And then, of course, there's straight up fantasy. I mean, this class, I would say, is a very strong class compared to the last few years. It also, building on that remark, I would also argue that this is one of the hardest years to predict since 2009, when they went to up to 10 nominees in a category. Now, there's 9 in this category, but I would definitely say that, for me, there's at least 3 that could walk away with this statue based on the steam that they picked up, other awards that they've won, a lot of the buzz surrounding them. And then, of course, sometimes the Oscars are nuts, and they just, the Academy will surprise you, and they will, throw something out there. Like last year, there was that big, ordeal where La La Land was announced, and then actually, La La Land did not win Best Picture. Mm. Moonlight did.
Right.
I remember sitting at the Oscars party that I go to, and I was like, "No, Moonlight's Best Picture. This is not. Mm-mm, nope." And then, of course, the whole thing unfolded, and Moonlight did win, and I was one of 3 people at the party that had Moonlight as Best Picture, and I was like, "I just sometimes I can predict what they're going to do, and sometimes I'm way off." So if you're listening now and you want to bet money on this, don't take my word for it.
Right.
But there are a few categories that I think are solid locks. And you can, once you've seen enough of the films, or you've read enough about how some of these other nominees have done for other awards, the Directors Guild of America usually has a very high prediction rate. In fact, it's almost 90% or higher for what wins Best Director, and then also potentially will win Best Picture. But at the same time, there have been people that have gone on to win the SAG Award and a Golden Globe, and then they don't even win, or they might not have even been nominated by the Academy. So sometimes it's easy to predict. Sometimes it's not.
We're going to get to those predictions in just a little bit, Blake. You're going to stay on the line. And also, we wanted to chat about if anyone has any big Oscar snubs out there. A movie that they've seen in their past that they, when they find out that it didn't win much or didn't win the Best Picture, that they're like, "What? How is that possible?" There's tons of them over the years. Of course, it's all a matter for opinion. But 312-91-7200, your predictions for the Oscars, and Blake will react to that. And biggest Oscar snubs coming up on 720 WGN. Little Foo Fighters here on 720 WGN. John Hanson and the wonderful, the beautiful.
Wow.
You're great, Esmeralda. I love you.
Thank you. I know.
Everyone, our texters love you too. The 847 just says, "I keep imagining Esmeralda being like Kramer."
Oh, yeah.
Sitting in bed eating the Kenny Rogers Roasters chicken.
Oh, and I would totally do that. Are you kidding me? Yes.
Just bobbing his head in bed.
Sounds like the best idea ever.
Blake Stubbs eats fried chicken in bed. He also is a movie critic. Blake, we're talking about the Oscars tonight, and we were talking about favorite kind of parts of the ceremony, and I know it's a big night for you, and it should be. You're totally into it. It's faded for me. I don't really watch it. Part of it's that I work on the morning show now, so I got to go to bed so early.
Right.
But I don't care about celebrities very much, so I don't watch the red carpet nonsense. Not nonsense. Sorry. If you like it, that's great. Sorry.
I like to be all judgy about what they're wearing.
That's cool. It's just not my thing. And then the ceremony, I don't really love. I think it takes too long. I like the monologue to see what they do at the open. And I like, my favorite part of the Oscars is the in memoriam part.
Wow.
Because I think it's always makes me sad or cry. But then I'm like, oh, yeah, that person died. Oh, that person.
A lot of people died. You always know who the popular people are.
Oh, when they clap.
Yeah. They clap. How rude is everyone? Stop clapping. Wait till the end.
Poor costume designer who no one remembers from 1958.
Or maybe 3 people in the audience knew them. So it's like you just hear this.
At least no one boos.
Could you? Oh, could you imagine?
I mean, you never know in this climate. Blake, what's your favorite part of the actual ceremony?
For me, honestly, it's always going to be best cinematography.
Okay.
Whenever that award is given out. Because I think it's, for me, when I'm watching films throughout the year, you don't know what's going to be nominated. You can get a sense of what's going to be nominated. You know, some things come right out of the festival circuit, and they're just, like, so huge, and they have all this steam, and then they get a great release, and they're backed. But then, honestly, sometimes I'm sitting in the theater, and I've had this happen a couple of times. Once, the first time I saw Brokeback Mountain, and the second time was when I saw Master and Commander, The Far Side of the World.
Oh, so good.
I was so stunned by some of the photography in both of those films that I was like, that's going to win best cinematography.
So what do you look for?
And then they did. Now, well, it's...
When you say best cinematography, what are you looking for? Is it the shots, lighting? Like, what is it? What is it that sticks out for you?
Well, it encompasses all of that. It encompasses, you know, the mise-en-scene of the scene, the composition of the shot, the place.
I eat some mise-en-scene in bed. I will let you do that, yeah.
Well, but there's great also dish. The lighting situation.
Okay.
A great director of photography is really, you know, having this ongoing either battle or dance with creating excellent light within a shot. For example, this year, there are, you know, a lot of great nominees. I mean, first of all, Mudbound was one of the best shot movies of the year. Rachel Morrison is the first woman nominated ever in this category. There's another, you know, Shape of Water. If you saw that, the imagery of that film was so vivid. And it was very, you know, transportive to sit there and watch and go back. It's kind of like you were going back in time, but it's also this fantastical Cold War, feels like the 1960s, you know, kind of era, late 50s, early 60s.
Is everyone comparing it? Because when I saw it, I thought Amelie.
Amelie, yeah. Well, it's very whimsical. Yeah,
yeah, I thought immediately of that kind
element
of
to it.
Those
yeah,
French movies.
Much more, like, grounded, and yet, you know, there's horror elements to it. There is some light comedy occasionally, and an endearing romance. You know, I can't go without mentioning that. That was one of the big hooks of the film. Mm-hmm. You've also got Dunkirk with Hoyte van Hoytema is nominated. This was a true epic. This was shot like the works of David Lean. You know, think Bridge on the River Kwai, think Lawrence of Arabia. It was shot in a very old-school style, and it needed to be. To showcase, you know, the vast emptiness of this beach filled with 400,000 soldiers, but also the dynamic nature of the dogfights that were taking place and all of the civilian sailors,
you know,
who were coming to rescue the infantry.
Blake, do you still see when you're watching these movies on a TV or on the big screen, does it make a difference? Do you see differences when you change format?
Occasionally, when it comes down to, you know, if you can go into, for example, Dunkirk, I was just, you know, mentioning that one. That was a massive scale shot partially on IMAX, should have been seen in IMAX, should have been heard in an IMAX theater to really grasp the immersive nature of the film and how, you know, chaotic yet at the same time deliberate all of the editing was. I think that it is better to see it on a big screen most of the time. Sometimes you just can't. Do you know what I mean? Like, Mudbound was not released widely in theaters. So,
and it depends on where you live. We're lucky here in Chicago, but some people in the outlying areas or downstate may not have access to all those theaters.
Yeah, and Mudbound, I saw it on Netflix.
Correct.
Right.
Yes, exactly. And that's where it was released. So Mudbound, you know, I mean, it obviously did get some theatrical release because it has to be considered for the Academy. But at the same time, you know, doing an L.A. and a New York release and then going straight to Netflix, they, you know, the exhibiting costs to, like, put this movie out in theaters was very down low. It had a very, you know, positive critical reaction, rightfully so. And audiences have loved it. So the fact that it is in this, you know, category, and not only to have been shot by a woman as well, and finally a woman is nominated in this category, is a very good thing. You know, you got Darkest Hour, which is the Gary Oldman-led Winston Churchill film. It was a beautifully shot film. I also thought it was pretty well edited, but I understand that a vast majority of what I loved about it was the way it was shot, not so much the way it was cut together.
And that's got to be hard to separate, because I think that sometimes you can like a movie, but you're going, it wasn't all that great. But you're like, but it was really cool what that photographer was able to do with it. That was the most intriguing part. I imagine that a movie that is shot beautifully, but it's not the best movie, it's, you know, it has its faults. I mean, those movies get hurt by that.
They do. What I like, though, is that a movie that is beautifully shot and may on the whole not be that great can still be recognized in a category like this. You know what I mean? Like, it may not have been one of the top, you know, 10 films of the year.
Right.
But if it's undeniable that it was one of the best shots, and it meets all forms of criteria.
Like, if a Pauly Shore movie was shot beautifully, could that still win Best Cinematography?
It could.
Yeah.
If the studio backs it, because they have to back it. They can't just say, hey, you know, it was released, you should nominate it. They have to, like, really campaign for these things.
I mean, the last nominee that we have.
Put into it.
The last nominee, Blade Runner. Is it nominated for anything else?
Yes, visual effects and a couple of other things. And Roger Deakins, the man who's nominated for it, for shooting Blade Runner, actually has 13 nominations. This is his 14th. He has never won. He is the Susan Lucci of Best Cinematography. However, a lot of people think he's going to win tomorrow. In no way will I be unhappy. This is the guy that shot No Country for Old Men. He shot Skyfall. He has always put together beautiful images, and he is a case study in what it means to light scenes, especially Blade Runner. If you saw it, and maybe even specifically saw it on a big screen, you know, the atmosphere in going back to this Blade Runner universe, because, you know, this is a sequel film, but going back there, he really, I think, amplified it and made it look immersive. It made it look, you know, dark when it needed to and bright when it needed. It's what he does with the camera and lights is just so unique. And there's always been some reason or another why he's lost. But for this year, I think it's his to run away with. However, I would give a close second to Dunkirk on this one. So I think the Academy is going to give it to Roger Deakins. I think that Dunkirk would be a very viable, you know, thing to mark down on your ballot. But at the same time, I think it's all Deakins this year, and I hope it is, because he's earned it.
All right, we got.
But that's one particular category that I think not a lot of people talk about.
Yeah, and you know, and I got to say that Blake isn't just wax poetic about cinematography. About 26 hours ago, we were at the Brass Rail in Champaign, which, if anyone knows what that bar is, it is the diviest of the dive bars. And Kill Bill 2, Blake, was it?
Volume 1.
Volume 1 was on this little TV, this tube TV, and Blake was like, "Stop, everyone! Look at this one shot in Kill Bill. It's a one. It's shot like it's one shot, but it's not. And look at the movement and the focus. And let's give props." To the guy
In the club.
Yes, and Blake was like, "You got to pay attention to the focus on this and how well the focus is." So,
I mean, that was a cool shot.
And it was really cool. I'm just saying that Blake Stubbs, even in a drunken stupor, is caring about cinematography at a dive bar in Champaign, Illinois. Blake, you're going to stick around on the line. You're going to give us more predictions, okay?
Absolutely.
Quick break here on 720 WGN. WGN, and a happy Sunday morning, everyone. It's Esmeralda Leon and myself, John Hanson, filling in for Dave Plyer, who was in earlier
on the WGN Radio Theater.
Did a great job. We've covered two topics today, and we will continue to cover the Oscars here with Blockbuster Blake. We also talked about Esmeralda's eating habits in bed, and I'm going to connect the two, okay?
Oh.
Movies and Esmeralda eating in bed and her love for it. Essentially, Esmeralda, your dream life would be one of the four grandparents in Willy Wonka, where you just lay in bed all day. I'm sure they ate in bed.
It seemed a bit crowded.
Can we talk, like you're on the line, right?
King-sized bed.
Can we all talk about this? Why were all four grandparents in the same king-size bed?
Because they couldn't afford anything else.
My grandparents wouldn't even be in the same room, like both sets on both sides of the family. They wouldn't get together for anything.
When
they
you're
were
real
neighbors.
Poor,
they were neighbors.
When you're real poor, you can't complain.
But
the bed or nothing.
I was gonna say, I think all they had was one room, John.
Right.
I'm not quite sure.
I'm not judging. I'm not trying to judge. But, like, I understand they're poor, but can't, like, when someone comes home and, like, Charlie's excited about something, at least two of them get on a bed to give him a hug or a high five or something.
Yeah,
like,
but they could barely.
Yeah, because they've been laying in bed. Esmeralda, this is your future. If you continue to eat full meals in bed, you will one day.
Yeah, but I don't lay there motionless. I move around. I roll around.
You go on your elbow.
Yeah.
My gosh.
That's some arm strength, man. Come
Anyways,
on.
I'm happy that I connected those dots.
I thought you were going to ask, what is the perfect movie food for Blake? But okay.
Ooh.
That's for the texters.
Like, what do you like to eat when you go to the movies?
What are you eating? What are you chomping on?
Well, if I'm watching a movie, I mean, I kind of treat it much like being at the movie theater. I'd likely do some candy. And by candy, I mean like Skittles or Reese's Pieces.
Ooh.
I'm pretty streamlined in terms of what I eat when I'm at the movies. So I would just do the same thing at home.
Okay. No
you know
popcorn?
What I mean? Like, I don't want to change it up. Well, no, not really. I mean, I'll eat it. I definitely do. It's just it's never always my go-to. And I think it's
begrudgingly
like, for me, like, begrudgingly. I mean, I will reluctantly eat that. No. The thing is, like, usually I just want some sugar, but, like, I'll buy a bag of Skittles or something, and, like, I'll eat half of it. And then I'm like, oh, that'll be for the next time. And I'm one of those guys that'll go to a movie, you know, twice in one weekend if, you know, multiple things have come out or there's stuff I need to see to review or talk about.
So you bring your leftovers.
I bring leftovers.
Do you store them in a special, in one of the seats, and then you come back for them later?
Right, the same one.
No. It's kind of like in Fargo when they stash the diamonds. Like, yes. Just, like, stash them, and then I go
You're
back. You're
stashing your Skittles.
Secrets.
Oh, that
no,
is.
No.
Okay, so let's get back to the what we came here to speak about,
right.
The actual movies and the Oscars. What should we go to next?
Yeah, what category are you expecting like a big surprise in?
You know, honestly, I'm thinking that right now, surprise, and I think there's a legitimate battle in the category is best supporting actress.
Oh,
I'm really looking for so. To give you just a quick glance at who the nominees are, you know, Mary J. Blige, who should, you know, be completely familiar to anyone who's ever listened to good music, is nominated for Mudbound. She also sang the song that the film is nominated for as well. Allison Janney, who many will know from The West Wing, or
yes.
Mom,
Roseanne.
The sitcom. And then Laurie Metcalf from Roseanne, who's also a Steppenwolf member. So I know the Chicagoland area will know Laurie Metcalf. Leslie Manville for Phantom Thread, and then Octavia Spencer, who has won in this category, for The Shape of Water. I think that the real battle is between Janney and Metcalf. So I, Tanya's one key nominee outside of, you know, Tanya herself, Margot Robbie, and then Laurie Metcalf for playing the mom in Lady Bird.
Although
both
Leslie Manville's character in Phantom Thread was the best, in my opinion.
She was phenomenal. She was phenomenal, and it where I find her performance, you know, its greatness is in the subtlety.
Right,
she's,
this little
she's much
snarky
more downplayed.
Things.
Oh. Yeah, and she's much more downplayed and sort of, you know, controlled and reserved compared to, you know, Allison Janney's character, who is this, you know, mother of Tanya Harding, and the way that she portrays her is just so, like, you love to hate her. She's just that good. And it's a career, you know, performance for her. And look, she's never bad. Okay. I just saw her on Broadway last year and I was just stunned at how good she is.
And
but,
it's quite a transformation too, right? For
Itanya.
I'm seeing a picture of her. I'm like, oh my gosh.
Oh yeah. The makeup effects on her were outstanding. I mean, they aged her considerably. They gave her, you know, and all of that is just the physicality of the role is not something I would downplay because, again, you know, just because someone's not doing, you know, figure skating doesn't mean that it's not an incredibly demanding physical role. And Janney, I think, really kind of tapped into this angry person on every level, physically, mentally. Like, it was just all she was that person. She did it. She channeled it. And then Laurie Metcalf just. Laurie Metcalf's performance is just so real. So many people can relate to the type of person that she was playing. And some people may find a lot of similarities in their own, you know, when you can have a performance that is that real, I think it's easy to connect with, and I think it's not a reason to count her out. Right now, my prediction would be that Allison Janney takes home the trophy tomorrow.
Okay.
But I don't want to write off Laurie Metcalf. I really don't. As far as Lady Bird goes and all of the buzz that it garnered, you know, when it had the 100% on Rotten Tomatoes and all of those things, Laurie Metcalf for me was the number one standout element. Greta Gerwig, you know, directing and writing that film did a stellar job, but she also got some incredible acting talent to step in front of her camera. And Metcalf is the number one in my eyes. So it's that's a tight battle. That whole category is outstanding. Everyone's great. But those two are the ones that I would pay attention to. So there might be a little bit of a surprise. But,
yeah.
That's where my ballot, you know, has been back and forth the last couple of days. Like, who am I going to vote for in that
right.
category? And right now, my vote is leaning toward Allison Janney.
312-981-7200, text or talk if you would like to weigh in on this year's Oscars. But I also want to introduce the question of Oscar snubs, because I think that a lot of people maybe haven't seen all the movies this year. So to just include everyone, if there's a movie that you've ever seen and loved and you can't believe when you find out that it hasn't, that it didn't win Best Picture, there's plenty of them out there. Everyone's kind of got one that they're either going to be convinced should have won and don't. And it's also fascinating to look back, and at the time decisions even seem okay, but looking back they seem a little silly. I think that one of the most fascinating years for Best Picture has to be the ones that came out in 94. So the 95 Oscars included nominees for Best Picture including iconic films Pulp Fiction, Shawshank Redemption, and Forrest Gump. Now, Esmeralda, when I name those three, do you know which one won or not?
I do.
Okay. Do you think that it was, so it was Forrest Gump?
Yes.
But a lot of people feel like that was a huge snub to Pulp Fiction and maybe to Shawshank Redemption as well. Obviously, there's a lot of great movies in certain years and that you can do about it. Yeah. Do you think they got it right that year?
You know, I do love Forrest Gump. It's a very epic movie compared to the other two, but Pulp Fiction was pretty great.
I know. Blake, what do you think of those three? Because I know a lot of people have an opinion on the 1995 Oscars.
Well, that was a very contentious year as far as Best Picture went, for sure. In fact, I wanted to pull up the entire slate. But yes, for me, Shawshank Redemption, for a lot of people, is the greatest movie ever made. IMDb lists it very high, which shows the audience's, you know, votes and confidence in that movie. Mm-hmm. Pulp Fiction, you know, did take home the Oscar for Best Original Screenplay, and compared to the other films that year, I would agree that was the exact right move. Forrest Gump was this epic story about your average Joe guy that just, it all, you know what I mean? It's comedic at times,
right,
but it also had ways of ripping your heart out. And I think that to the voters that year, that's what spoke. But I also want to mention Quiz Show, that was nominated against it. That is a brilliant film that, if you've never seen, and by the way, compared to the three we just spoke of, you probably haven't. But if you have, you know that there were great performances in it. It was a very interesting story because it actually was based on actual events with, you know, the trivia show that it ended up being a fix. And then, you know, the public found out about it, and it was this big, you know, disgrace and this whole thing. Like, TV was supposed to be this magical, real thing, and in this case, it wasn't. The other mention is Four Weddings and a Funeral, which was a fine film in its own right. But when you look at that big three, like you mentioned, I get why they went with Forrest Gump. I think it probably should have been Shawshank Redemption, and I'm glad that Pulp Fiction was considered, and it certainly, you know, deserved its original screenplay.
Yeah, some years you just can't pick. Know. I think that a lot of people are, there's a few recent ones that I know people feel like snubs. In 2010, I was a huge fan of King's Speech, and I still think it stands up, but a lot of people were surprised that Black Swan didn't win, or The Social Network, that was that year. Even Toy Story 3 was in that category. The Fighter was there. Yeah, that was a great year, but some people are like, no, I mean, and some people then they go to the promotional side of things, and that you know, we can't say his name that much anymore, but Harvey Weinstein is a good promoter of his own movies, or certainly was, and can help push those sorts of things on people. But, and Blake, you mentioned this one in the last hour, Brokeback Mountain losing to Crash. Was it Crash when it lost? I think it was.
Yeah.
And I know Crash was one of the most controversial picks for Best Picture. And I'm just shocked looking back that Brokeback Mountain didn't win that year.
Yeah, I mean, Brokeback Mountain taking, you know, Best Achievement in Directing was exactly what I figured it would win. I also, you know, felt like it was going to, you know, get adapted screenplay. Like, this film did very well. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, it did very well. It was kind of an art house film. It was a much smaller film. It was one of those films that, you know, you're glad that finally Hollywood is paying attention to the types of films that it should, not just the stuff that it's used to paying attention to. And that was a really big year. I mean, Crash, Capote, Munich, Good Night and Good Luck, and Brokeback Mountain. And yes, Crash won, and a lot of people have had issues with that. You know, it's a fine film. It brings a lot of attention to real issues that I think audiences can easily connect to. So the fact that it won, you know, for me, that
was... It was preachy. I don't like preachy movies.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's the straight-up reason why a lot of people have always had a problem with it. And, I, you know, a brief correction to myself earlier, you know, Memoirs of a Geisha is what won Best Cinematography that year. And I felt Brokeback Mountain did deserve it. But Memoirs of a Geisha, in no, it was a Rob Marshall film. His films are always beautiful. Mm-hmm. And in no way was I surprised that it won. You know what I mean? Like, it's one of those things where that's a great category to pay attention to because it's so non-mainstream compared to what everybody else, you know, likes to, you know, you can pick your best actor, you can pick your best picture or this or that or the other. But cinematography, we're watching movies. They're moving pictures. Cinematography is the, you know, the basis of all of this. So I always want to, you know, point people in that direction. Mm-hmm. And I think in this case, yeah, Brokeback Mountain probably should have won Best Picture over Crash, at least. Good Night and Good Luck was a fun, you know what I mean? Like, this was a great,
a good year, yeah.
Good, like, yeah. So, and we're not, and that was, you know, a few years before they moved on to doing up to 10 nominees.
Right.
So that was still back when they only did 5. Yeah. And it was probably a little easier to pick, you know, back then, because you don't have to see as much or think about, you know, the implications of why they're going to choose this or choose that.
Or what the reaction's going to be on social media afterwards and how big of a story. No, really. I mean, like, it's just overtaking these awards.
Yeah, that wasn't happening.
It is. So yeah, I mean, look, no one... Oh, go ahead.
No, I was gonna go with a snub that I am to this day still mad about.
Oh, let's hear it. Let's hear it.
I am angry. Best Supporting Actor in 90, I think I looked at it, it was 96.
Well, this is a specific thing you're upset about, yes.
Yeah. Edward Norton got the snub. Cuba Gooding Jr. won for Show Me the Money. When Edward Norton in Primal Fear, best villain, like, story. And that movie wasn't even that great, but his performance in it was amazing.
Edward Norton in Primal Fear, and if you are one who has never seen it, you owe it to yourself to watch what a really great supporting role can do for someone's career. That was his first big film.
Yeah.
That was what put him on the map, and rightfully so. I mean, if you're looking at someone like, you know, look who he was acting opposite, you know, Richard Gere and Laura Linney.
Mm-hmm.
Both are, you know, great actors with great careers and people know them. And I wouldn't say Laura Linney at the time was the household name she's become, you know, thanks to television and film. But Edward Norton, if you take anything away from that movie, it's going to be how haunting he was.
Oh, for sure.
How, you know, just... He will make your blood boil, or he will make you your insides churn. Like, he was so scary.
Sounds like you need
in that film that you need to watch it. You need to see it. I mean, it's one of those genuinely frightening performances. And yes, he did lose to Cuba Gooding Jr.
Whatever.
Who, by the way, that was
still mad about it.
Yeah, I can tell. Man, that is a specific one. Blake, we got to take a quick commercial break because we have to. Because rules, I don't know. Because it's that time. We're going to talk a little bit about some more Oscar snubs. 312-981-7200. Call or text. Everyone's got one. I know Blake and I share one very similar one. A movie from the 70s. A big one. One of our favorites that is a huge snub. Blake and I are going to talk about that.
I was going to say West Wing is a TV show. That can't be nominated for an Oscar.
No, don't worry. That got every single award and it deserved every single one. Probably should have deserved more. More on 720 on WGN. 720 WGN, John Hanson, Esmeralda Leon, filling in for Dave Plyer. We're talking about Oscars and Oscar snubs with Blockbuster Blake. And we've got Mike on the line. Mike joining us from Mount Pleasant, Wisconsin. Did I just hang up on Blake accidentally there, Curtis?
I think you did.
I just hit one button.
Blake was so
incensed. I'll get him queued up for
Blake will get him queued up. Mike, why don't you go ahead and share us which movie you thought was a little bit of a snub in, I think we're going back to the 70s, right, Mike?
Yeah, you mentioned 70s right before whatever announcement you had a few minutes ago. One of my favorite movies of the 70s was Dog Day Afternoon with Al Pacino. It had everything, and I don't know if to this day if it got any Academy Awards at all. That's my first comment. I have another one. Does anybody there know if Dog Day Afternoon got
Yeah, that's a great movie.
So I have got, we were pulling this up, it did receive, of course, a critical acclaim when it came out in September 75. It was nominated for several Academy Awards and Golden Globe Awards, and it won the Academy Award for Best Original Screenplay. So it did win one award there for Best Original Screenplay.
Yeah, and the storyline on that for the 70s?
Right.
When I first saw it, I was like, wait, when did this happen?
Right.
Just that whole storyline of him getting the money
right
for his boyfriend who wants a sex change operation. This is 1975.
Blake, your thoughts on Dog Day Afternoon? And sorry to Mike who called in. We got to get moving along, so I dropped you off the line. But Blake, your thoughts on Dog Day Afternoon?
It is, that movie is a tour de force as far as acting goes. It's also brilliantly directed and executed. It really helps create both a claustrophobic and a very erratic, powder keg type atmosphere with, the robbery of a bank with a very personal agenda behind why the bank is being robbed. Because, Al Pacino's character Sonny is robbing the bank so that his boyfriend, played by Chris Sarandon, both of those actors were nominated, by the way, for leading actor and supporting actor, respectively. It was one of those films that definitely was turning that whole "this is what Hollywood is" in terms of the movies they're making on its head at the time. And I think that the recognition that it did receive was very worth it. I mean, I agree with it. I think that all those nominations were right on. That was a tough year, though.
I was just going to say, Blake, because that's where our spoiler mining use, or not spoiler, but snubs, comes in. We both love, and you want to go ahead and say it, Blake?
Well, and it was the following year, but Jaws. Jaws had some serious snubs.
But Jaws was in the same category as Dog Day Afternoon, and then the winner, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. So, yes, I want to say that Jaws is a big snub, and so is Dog Day Afternoon, but Cuckoo's Nest is incredible.
Yeah, that is a great movie.
It is. It is. And Cuckoo's Nest, really, that was Cuckoo's Nest. That was its Oscars. I mean, best director, best actor. It was one of those movies that I think because of the way it was showcasing a part of society that most of the everyday average Joe tries to ignore or is completely ignorant to. And the fact that, Jack Nicholson's character is crazy, but he's not crazy. And the torture, in their minds that goes on with these people. And by the way, Brad Dourif, who was nominated for Best Supporting Actor, who went on to be the voice of Chucky the Killer Doll, is a phenomenal actor, by the way, Brad Dourif. And if you're not familiar, but you're like, wait a minute, the guy that played Billy Bibbit, he was amazing.
Oh, I loved Billy.
He's the voice of Chucky?
The voice of Chucky.
Oh.
And there is another performance of his that I cannot recommend enough for people. And again, this is what the Oscars do to me. Like, there's a lot of, well, this person did this and this was great, but they didn't win the award, but they've also gone on to do these other things. His performance as Doc Cochran on Deadwood, HBO series Deadwood, is one of the finest supporting roles from any actor I have ever seen. He is a phenomenal talent, and Milos Forman and everybody who worked with him on that film knew it. I'm glad that the Academy recognized a rookie at the time.
Yeah.
In fact, he was nominated for, he did win a Golden Globe for being a debut actor in a film that year. So I mean, he didn't go without accolade.
Right.
Okay. But the fact that he was nominated, and while he didn't win, George Burns won for The Sunshine Boys, but when the company that he was with, Chris Sarandon, Jack Warden, Burgess Meredith. That's a pretty big step. And, similarly this year, there's a couple of rookies that are up for Best Director.
We're going to get to those. Unfortunately, we got to hit the news here, but we'll get to Director. And we got to obviously get the Best Picture, but we're getting a bunch of texts coming in on big snubs, too. So please keep those texts coming. Biggest Oscar snubs that you can remember, whether it's a specific film, specific actor, over the years, whatever it is, 312-981-7200. You can talk or text in. But it is 3:30, and the man who always deserves all the accolades, all the awards. He's never been snubbed in his life.
Oh, you shouldn't know from it.
What'd you say?
You shouldn't know from it.
What's that? What are you? What's that from?
It's a Yiddish type of phrase.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you shouldn't know from it.
You shouldn't know from it.
Yeah.
Am I saying that right?
Yeah.
I've never heard that before.
With a little accent.
Yeah, you got to throw a little.
You shouldn't know for it.
From it. Get it right.
You shouldn't know for it, from it,
you
to
practice
it.
Practice while I do the news.
Whatever, 3:31, here's Roger. Seven 20 WGN, John Hanson and Esmeralda Leon filling in for Dave Plyer here on this Sunday morning. And we're joined by Blockbuster Blake. I always want to say Block Bluster Blake.
Oh, I was thinking, was in the 90s, was it Blockbuster Video Blake?
That was Family Video Blake in the 1990s. Blake, we're talking about all things Oscars, Oscar snubs, or predictions for tonight. 312-981-7200. A movie, actor, something that you cannot believe didn't win their category, or when you look back, you say, "How the heck did that film not win? We had a text from the 312 saying, I've always felt it was a crying shame that Cary Grant never won a Best Actor, especially for the movie North by Northwest. Thank you, Steve, for that text. Blake, your thoughts on Cary Grant?
I can agree with that. That is, you are not the only one who thinks that. Or to at least, you know, I mean, he did win an honorary award in 1970, but the fact that he was never even nominated for North by Northwest, which is an incredibly fine film and one worth studying if you want to know how to make a great movie. I would agree with that 100%. He was a fine actor. He was nominated twice. He never won, but he did get, you know, the honorary Oscar later in life. Cary Grant was a giant of classic Hollywood, for sure.
It's amazing when you look at names of Oscars of people that have never won. Mm-hmm. And you know one name that comes up a lot, and Esmeralda, I don't know if you feel this is true or not, and Blake, your thoughts. At least I don't think he's won, or at least not for Best Actor. Tom Cruise, has he ever won an Oscar?
No. No, he hasn't.
He has not.
And is that a crying shame?
Not.
Because I know a lot of people, you know, whatever you feel about him personally and the Scientology stuff and all that may play a role in that, who knows, but...
He's nominated, though, right?
Has he been? I don't know.
Yes. He's had three nominations. He was nominated for Born on the 4th of July. Yeah. He was nominated for Jerry Maguire. And he was also nominated for a supporting role
in Rain Man?
Thomas Anderson's. In Magnolia.
Oh, okay.
Magnolia. So, yeah, no, he was not even considered for Rain Man. But Born on the 4th of July, that is a. If you've never seen that film, that is a big one. However, that year, he would have been hard-pressed to beat the man who did win, which was Daniel Day-Lewis for My Left Foot.
Oh,
yeah.
That was his first. But he was also opposite Robin Williams for Dead Poets Society, Morgan Freeman for Driving Miss Daisy, and Kenneth Branagh for Henry V.
That's rough.
Henry V was a great sequel to the... It was the best of the Henrys.
Of the best of the Henrys. Certainly.
Henry I was
like
good.
Henry VIII, but...
Yeah, no, by then it gets a little old... By the eighth Henry, you kind of know what's coming. I don't know what
franchises
I'm talking about.
Franchises dwindle, man. Franchises dwindle. That's the easiest way to say it.
Right.
Tom Cruise. I mean, he's one of the biggest movie stars in the world.
You mentioned
can't argue.
Yeah. You mentioned Best Supporting Actor, which I think these supporting categories are where we get sometimes some surprises that come along. Mm-hmm. One, Blake, that I know we've talked about, Mr. Stubbs, is I believe it was 93 movies, so the 94 awards is... Tommy Lee Jones wins Best Supporting Actor for The Fugitives, beating out one of the best performers of all time in Schindler's List.
Oh.
Yeah, which was Ralph Fiennes for playing the role of Amon Goth or Amon Gotha.
Probably one of the biggest movie villains of all time. I mean, real life villains, of course, mm-hmm. but in the movies. Yeah. I mean, one of the most villainous creatures. And I love The Fugitive, and I love Tommy Lee Jones in it. And maybe he deserved it. I don't know. It's kind of that's that when you're talking about different genres of movies and different tones and everything, you know, these are hard categories to pick one winner.
It is. I would say this was the beginning, though, of the true snub fest that carried on until The Revenant. Leonardo DiCaprio that same year was nominated for Best Supporting Actor opposite Tommy Lee Jones, Ralph Fiennes, Pete Postlewaite, and John Malkovich. But DiCaprio's performance in What's Eating Gilbert Grape.
So good.
It is one of the most touching, it is one of the most endearing, and it is one of, at times, even heart-wrenching performances by a young actor that I think anybody has ever seen, period. I think that it showed his true talent. It showed the, you know, because up till that point, he was kind of only really known as the kid from Growing Pains. You know what I mean? Like he was an up and coming talent. He very much was. But that is a career making role for a young man. And to be in that company of the people that he was in this category, the talent there is huge. But the fact that Tommy Lee Jones beat out, to me, DiCaprio and Ralph Fiennes is, it's crazy. I think it was one of those things where it happened. Okay, I'm going to move on. But I would agree. I would agree that was a big snub for both DiCaprio and Fiennes.
What's Eating Gilbert Grape is so good.
What about Romeo and Juliet? Anybody? No? Okay, fine.
Whatever. He was good. Here's the thing. DiCaprio's never bad.
He's never bad.
He's always very good. There's just certain films that I think... If you go on to know that, you know, DiCaprio was going to be in something as huge as Titanic, okay, right. Or as stylistic as Romeo and Juliet, or as, you know, raw and gritty as The Revenant.
Basketball Diaries.
Basketball Diaries, the same thing. You know, What's Eating Gilbert Grape is a much more independent in spirit type of film. Mm-hmm. And so for an actor to get that kind of nomination at such a young age in a film that, you know, comparatively, like to the rest of the stuff that was nominated that year, doesn't really fall into the same category as anything else. That's a standout element to the performance, I think, in terms of appraising it. And I think that he, over time, you know, honed his craft. I think he definitely has had close calls. And then finally, mm-hmm. when he won, it was deserved, in my opinion. But at the same time, you could have gone all the way back to the Oscars in 94 and given him a statue for What's Eating Gilbert Grape. Mm-hmm. I stand by that.
Now, you mentioned Daniel Day-Lewis earlier that he yep. won for My Left Foot. He apparently, this is his last movie, right? Phantom Thread that he was just in and
that
he's
is,
nominated?
That's the rumor.
Do you think
this is his swan song? Do I think he's going to win?
Do you think he has any chance?
I think he has a chance. I don't think he's going to win it, though. I think this category, the whole category, just so you know, the mm-hmm. company in that category is Daniel Day-Lewis from Phantom Thread, Timothy Chalamet for Call Me By Your Name, Daniel Kaluuya for Get Out, Gary Oldman for Darkest Hour, and Denzel Washington for Roman J. Israel Esquire. This is Gary Oldman's Oscar.
Oh, okay.
There were other roles that he's played that he could have won an Oscar for, but this is going to be Gary Oldman's Oscar. I don't have any problem marking Gary Oldman. I wouldn't even second guess it. I think this is going to be his year. But his Winston Churchill in Darkest Hour it's fantastic. It's human, it's flawed, and yet it's exquisite. You know, it's just one of those things where playing Winston Churchill is kind of like a rite of passage for great English actors at this point.
Mm-hmm.
but Gary Oldman's portrayal, I think, really takes the audience inside what it was like to be either the man himself or near the man during the time when he assumed power. He didn't really ask for it. The country, you can go through the annals of history, mm-hmm. fewer times especially when a world war was about to break out, or already going on in some cases, did a country need a real leader that they had confidence in? And this is that's the story that's being told here.
Yeah.
It's a little different than, you know, the likes of Dunkirk, which is taking place around a military, you know, campaign incident, whereas this is much more introspective about the man himself, what he was going through, the stresses of trying to be a political leader when a lot of his contemporaries don't necessarily back him up. They don't believe in him. And he was there's that English bulldog, you know, image, the British bulldog, and the way that Oldman, you know, grows as an actor in this film, it's refreshing. And again, he's amongst great company here. Everybody in this category was outstanding, but I think this is going to be Gary Oldman's year, finally.
All right, so we still have to break down Best Director, right? We got to do mm-hmm. Actress and, of course, Best Picture. So we're going to do that after this commercial break. And also, any more Oscar snubs you want to get in, 312-981-7200, give us a text. We'll talk about all that and wrap up the Oscar talk with a Blockbuster Video Blake on 720 WGN. WGN, happy Sunday morning, everybody. John Hanson and Esmeralda Leon filling in for Dave Plyer, who filled in for Carl earlier. Mm-hmm. So he's just moved his shift up a few hours. And we're talking with Blake Stubbs, Blockbuster Blake, about all things the Oscars, which, of course, are tonight. And, Blake, we've been talking about snubs. We've been talking about predictions. Really quickly, you got a snub that you wanted to mention. It's not a name that people may know in the households, but maybe they should for all the pioneering he's done in a certain field.
Correct. I think that this is a big discussion that should happen in the near future for the Academy, for Hollywood Foreign Press, for all the award, you know, categories that are out there that honor acting. Andy Serkis is the man's name. He is probably known to a lot of people. He played Gollum or Smeagol in the Lord of the Rings films, where his entire performance up until they did show him as Smeagol younger live action, but it was all motion capture. Most recently, he was seen as Caesar in War for the Planet of the Apes. He's played Caesar in all of these films. He also was Supreme Leader Snoke in Star Wars The Last Jedi. What he is doing is actually portraying a character. He's playing it. He has rigging that's put up on his face that they can capture all the nuance of his performance. It is not as simple as the guy is voicing a character and it's all created through CGI. His movements, his performance is something that actually is being captured and put onto screen.
Does he do the voice too then, or does he do the voice as well?
He does the voice, yes. He does it all live.
Can you not? Can he not be nominated in other categories, or is he just not nominated because it doesn't take on the look of him as that person?
It's really a whole conversation that they haven't even tried to, you know, open up yet. For example, this film, War for the Planet of the Apes, is nominated for Best Visual Effects this year. I think it's going to win Best Visual Effects. I think it should win Best Visual Effects. But every time he does one of these films, and again, I focus in on him because of the volume that he has done of this kind of work and has been one of the leading pioneers in getting other actors to do this. It's like a whole facet of acting for cinema that is just not even acknowledged yet. They don't know how to, you know, reword the criteria. Maybe they need to create a new category. Do you know what I'm saying? Like,
no, it makes whole,
like,
yeah.
It needs to open up soon because there's great, truly great performances. Like,
are his characters though considered supporting actor or actor in a leading role?
Well, see, this is the interesting part. For War for the Planet of the Apes, that's the third film in a trilogy, right? So far. That they're telling the Planet of the Apes, lore. They're expanding it out and making it more modern. He was more of a supporting role in the first two, but in the third, he was 100% the leading actor of the film. He was the leading actor. There was no question about who had the most screen time, who had the bigger impact on the narrative. It was Andy Serkis. There was another actor opposite him, which was Steve Zahn, who could have been nominated for a supporting role. But again, it's this whole, because it's motion capture, it's not really acknowledged.
It's interesting because you look at Gary Oldman, who, you know, gets transformed into Winston Churchill.
Yes.
You look at Ralph Fiennes and all the characters he's done that he's been transformed. Other actors that never, Gary Oldman, they never look like the character they're playing, and they're just using makeup and prosthetics. What's the difference between little balls all over their face and to capture the thing? I mean, it should just be the same thing. They should at least certainly just be considered for the main acting categories, or is it a matter of, we have to start a whole new category, Blake.
See, and that, I think that's the big question. What I'm trying to propose is that the Academy needs to address this in the next couple of years. If they're going to be all about change and they're going to be all about, you know, branching out and diversifying the way that they approach, finding nominees or accepting nominees or anything like that, this entire facet of acting for cinema needs recognition.
Yeah.
And until the Academy does it, because again, the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences is still, it's seen as the preeminent. It is the end all be all. To win an Oscar is the biggest accolade one can win. And I think that it would be very crucial to start acknowledging these types of performances, because to be honest with you, if you are able to, you know, see any behind the scenes footage of Andy Serkis in Planet of the Apes films, any one of them, to be honest with you, you start to see how much of a performer he is. Now, granted, he gets mostly character roles and other things.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, he was just in Black Panther and he was awesome in that.
Mm-hmm.
But for the fact that he has put so much effort into creating these magical performances, and I say magical because, yes, he's wearing a skin tight suit and he's got dots all over his face and he's wearing a camera rig that, you know, is capturing all the nuance of what his face does for movement, and it matches it up with what we end up seeing in the final product. He's doing that.
Yeah.
It's
not a computer editor. It's not an editor in a computer bay later on. Hey, Blake, I think that's a great one. We only have six more minutes, so I want to make sure we get to you wrapping up these last three categories. So 2 minutes apiece, let's talk about Best Actress.
Best Actress. Well, this year you got representatives from most of the films we've already mentioned, with one exception being The Post. Meryl Streep, Queen Streep, is nominated. Saoirse Ronan for Lady Bird, Margot Robbie for I, Tonya, Frances McDormand for Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, and finally Sally Hawkins for The Shape of Water. This is a great category. These are all great performances.
Who will win? Who should win? I think that's those two questions.
I think it's the answer to both for me. Is going to be Frances McDormand for Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. I think she deserves it, and I think that she will. I think she has all the steam going in. She's already won the Golden Globe. I believe she cleaned up the SAG-AFTRA. You know, steam going into tomorrow's broadcast is really in her favor. But that's not to count out any of these other women, because to be quite honest with you, I loved every one of them and the parts that they played. They were stellar.
I think that if Meryl Streep loses tomorrow, though, I think her career is really on thin ice.
Right.
I don't know if she has much to back. This is it for her.
Yeah, I think she'll take a brief break.
Yes.
But I think we will have not seen the last of Meryl Streep. At least I hope not.
Best director.
Best director. You're looking at Christopher Nolan for Dunkirk, Jordan Peele for Get Out, Greta Gerwig for Lady Bird, Paul Thomas Anderson for Phantom Thread, and The Shape of Water's Guillermo del Toro. As of right now, I think it's pretty much a lock that Guillermo del Toro is going to win this award. He already won the DGA, which, like I said earlier, is about 90%+ accurate in, you know, picking this particular category. Jordan Peele and Greta Gerwig are rookies. This is Get Out and Lady Bird were respectively their first films. They did write and direct those films. Paul Thomas Anderson's Phantom Thread, he writes, he directs, he edits, he shoots, he does it all. He's been nominated 8 times and never won. Del Toro's been nominated 3 times and never won. Christopher Nolan's got multiple nominations, but this is the first time he's ever been nominated for Best Director. I would say if anybody has a chance in my mind, or who I would vote for over Del Toro, it would be Nolan. That film was, Dunkirk was an epic. It was an epic on every scale. It certainly, you know, harkens back to the type of filmmaking you saw in the 40s and 50s, where everything you see on the screen, when it can be, was real. Of course, they used CGI in places, and they added extra bodies digitally and blah, blah, blah. But they used real planes, real boats, real actors, real sailors, real pilots, everything to make that movie feel as accurate as it could possibly be. So I would maybe not write him off, but for me, it's going to be Del Toro.
All right.
A beautiful film he made. Can't skip it.
You've got 2 minutes, Blake, to do Best Picture.
Yeah.
Because I know this one has a lot of stuff.
So there's 9 nominees. Call Me By Your Name, Darkest Hour, Dunkirk, Get Out, Lady Bird, Phantom Thread, The Post, Shape of Water, 3 Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. There's only 3 films in here that I think are going to have a really good chance of walking out with that statue. The Shape of Water is the most nominated film this year. That's the one a lot of people are picking and putting on their ballots. I think it's probably going to win. I would like to see 3 Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri take home that statue, but also Get Out is a film I don't want to write off. It came out the earliest of any film in this category, and it also has stuck with me and the people who saw it so vividly, and so it's such a film for right now. And I think that tomorrow, if it were to be the dark horse that upsets The Shape of Water, that would be fantastic. And 3 Billboards shares a lot of commonality, I think, with Get Out in terms of talking about modern day issues being very much in the now. You know, people calling each other out on their crap, redemption stories for 3 Billboards. This is a tough category. It's the toughest it's been in years, and those are the big 3 that I would say one of them is going to take it home tomorrow.
I think that it's always an interesting thing to look at the behind the scenes and the balloting and how that all works. A lot of people feel like perhaps what could happen is that 3 Billboards and The Shape of Water kind of split votes for people that only look at the more recent ones. That's the popular choices, and then that's how you get a one that people hadn't considered. That's how you get a winner, because you don't need a majority. Yep. You just need the most. You need the plurality, and that's sometimes those votes get split around.
Yep, that's correct. And again, like I said, tough category. It is, and I'm excited to see what happens. More so than I was last year when I was pretty confident that one film would win, and then they had that whole fiasco, and then it ended up winning anyway. This year, I think it's genuinely, there could be a surprise in this category. And I hope that there is.
Yeah.
I hope that in the end, you know, all of these are great films. People should watch them.
As long as it's not a surprise for the presenter.
They're bringing him back.
Oh,
did you hear that?
Oh, Warren Beatty's going to do it again?
Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway.
Oh, I'm sure they'll do a bit of some kind.
Yeah, we'll find out.
Blake, why didn't Baywatch get nominated for anything? Where is that on?
That should have been a sweep.
That should have been a sweep of them all.
Anybody who has heard me on WGN this year, in the last year, knows that I did review Baywatch and talked about how it was just a massive miss. Everything about that movie missed.
Really?
No.
It's weird because it's a movie that has a lot of people involved that I'm a fan of, but nothing clicked. I sat and watched
it. Like, I wasn't actually asking for you to review Baywatch again. I was making a joke.
No, but we know it's bad.
Well, The only thing that was a joke was the movie itself.
Oh, that's a good one.
That's a good one.
That even gave you the top of the hour tone. That's how good that joke was, Blake. Blake, as always, thanks so much for joining us, man. Get some sleep, okay?
Thank you. You guys have a great one and enjoy Oscar Sunday.
I will. I'll be in bed eating a rotisserie chicken.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently.
You should.
As I should. Okay.
In a bow tie.
Exactly. We got some really great stuff coming on. We've got a veteran coming on to talk about a really awesome program he started and works on. It's awesome stuff. I cannot wait to talk to him. That'll be coming up after the news.